A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, one and all. Welcome to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Bet365. My name is Marcus Speller. That guy over there is Luke Moore.
All right, everyone.
And the man behind the bushes, it's Jim Campbell.
Yo.
Get out from behind there, Jim.
Never.
Football time.
It's almost Friday.
It is. It is a question of Friday. Football, Jim. Bloody football was brilliant the other night when Liverpool crushed Roma.
All right, beautiful.
They didn't crush them as much as they should have done, of course, Roma scoring those two goals.
Well, they crushed them and then they sort of smoothed them out a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
As James Horncastle said on the continent yesterday, according to the Italian press, they could kill us, but they let us live.
Merciful. Merciful Klopp.
It was merciful Klopp, indeed.
But they gubbed Roma.
Yes, I was about to say that. Tell everyone listening at home the word you've used to describe it, gubbed.
Yeah.
It's a Scottish word.
It's a very Scottish
and
word.
And it needs a wider audience.
It does need a wider audience. Well, to go even more regional in Scotland, you could say that Roma and Liverpool, it wasn't a pagger. It was very much a one-sided...
It wasn't a stramash. what other Scottish football words are there that are specific to Scottish football, Marcus?
Oh, blimey. Fitbar.
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 Yeah, it was... Liverpool was scintillating.
Oh, it was beautiful. You said in the WhatsApp group at the time, Luke, because we were all sort of salivating over it, that it's like one of the great semi-final performances, and it absolutely is. It was kind of amazing that Roma got back into it at all, because it looked like they could really go for the jugular and make it six or seven here. Just swarm.
Yeah, and at the moment, it looks like it'll be a Liverpool-Real Madrid final. Much can change, of course, as Barcelona found out in the previous round. And, of course, Bayern... Bayern was slightly disappointing, of course, against Real Madrid. They had their injuries, and Real Madrid are Real Madrid, for crying out loud. But they'll still be disappointed they lost the game, of course. But you never know what they could do at the Bernabeu. But Liverpool have really got to be thinking, this competition's there for the taking.
Oh, they're 95% there. And I think, as I've maintained, I think over a single game format, which the final will be, assuming they make it there, hard to see any team dealing with them, really. I think it's going to be... If they play Real Madrid in the final, it'll be a straight shootout. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if Liverpool win it. I really wouldn't.
Do you think, though, not having the home advantage, because, you know, Anfield terrifies teams, it gets in teams' heads, that'd be a problem for Liverpool, would it not?
It's interesting because if you look at the knockout phase of the Champions League this year, I think I'm right in saying every single tie Liverpool have been in, they've blitzed the team in the first leg.
Yeah.
To the point where the second leg's not even been a concern. So they beat... was it Porto 5-0?
Yeah.
They beat City 3-0 and they've beaten Roma 5-2. I mean, it's not even really giving anyone much of a chance to come back at them. But in the final, it is on neutral territory. It probably will be a factor, but I think Liverpool really only know how to play one way. And some of the Liverpool fans I've spoken to over the season, the thing they've been complaining about is their game management, not the fact that they struggle away from home. So... they might not need to have any game management if they score three or four in the first half an hour against a team.
What if they go 3-0 up and lose in the final? Could you imagine that?
Close the loop.
Yeah.
Close the loop.
That's
Could happen. Could happen. Really? That's what they'll be scared of.
Well, they're also scared that if any Liverpool fans are listening, that we're talking like they're already in the final. They're thinking, hang on.
Oh, I think they're 95% there. I was working on the radio yesterday. I spoke to Graham Souness and he agrees. They are 95% there.
Well, if Souness says it, then that's
he's won it three times.
Yeah. I think reality wouldn't dare disagree with it if Souness is saying it's going to happen. But the thing I love about the Champions League this season and the stage we're at now is even if Roma complete an amazing comeback and win it, Roma winning the Champions League is a seismic, incredible thing. There's all the romance of Liverpool getting, you know, possibly back to a final and just the brilliance with which they play. Real Madrid could win it a third time. If Bayern win it, Jupp Heynckes has come back and won the Champions League again. Like, there's no disappointing winner. Yeah, there is no underwhelming winner.
There is for me, Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Three in a row, though.
I don't want that to happen.
No?
I like the fact that a couple of years ago, no one had defended the trophy.
Yeah.
You don't want it to become a little bit...
But you also got reason, very... Marcus also got very annoyed when Chelsea won it.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah, you said it wasn't right.
I did.
Did I say that?
No, I'm paraphrasing.
Oh, right, okay.
You might be thinking of me.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm angry at Bayern for many reasons, but one of them is they let Chelsea win the Champions League.
I was very much supporting Chelsea that evening, and I think when it comes to it, I sort of will probably support the English side, which is why I want Liverpool to win it, of course.
I want Liverpool to win it because they play the most exciting football.
Yeah, I don't really care about... I'm not necessarily support an English team because they're in it. I just really like Liverpool. Well, they're the most entertaining side in there.
It's not necessarily... Yeah, but when Manchester United, you know, when we were at the final in Rome for Manchester United against Barcelona, Barcelona won 2-0. Barcelona were the best side in Europe that season, and they were playing the best football. But I found myself just cheering for Manchester United in the final. I suppose it's the familiarity of those players.
I'd like to be on record saying that I didn't.
Have a strong allegiance to...
Well, it's different. It wasn't really about that, though.
I do think it's different when you don't support a Premier League team. I think he's got really got no... I don't really have any affiliation either way. Maybe it says more about me than the whole situation, but if it's a team like Chelsea, and I'm just picking them for no particular reason, I don't really see what's that English about them.
Okay, fair enough. But it's a bit like in an international
tournament. Football isn't like that now, though, is it? It's very international, very cosmopolitan.
True. So if you look at the international tournaments, the reason why if I'm watching any of the other British nations or Ireland or something like that, it's just the familiarity of those players. I just was like, oh, there's what's his name, blah, 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 and tend to... There's Jimmy Traore playing for the Republic of Ireland.
Will he make the England squad?
Probably not, but sadly...
Make your one, Marcus.
Sadly, Oxlade-Chamberlain won't be.
Oh, that yes.
Such a shame for Liverpool and obviously England, because he's been brilliant for Liverpool.
It's funny, Marcus, because what Jim was saying before he came on air was, that's what you get if you leave Arsenal.
Yeah.
Well, and
that's what you get if you stay at Arsenal.
For the record, Jim was not saying that.
Wasn't saying that.
It's very frustrating to see that Oxlade-Chamberlain will miss the World Cup in particular, though, isn't it? Because he has
a Champions League final.
Oh,
probably.
Absolutely. But he's added, you know, so much to his game since leaving Arsenal. He's a really dynamic, very quick, pacey, just forward-thinking player. And England do lack those. And that's a real... People are saying Ruben Loftus-Cheek will probably come in and replace him. And Loftus-Cheek is a good player that's played very well for England, but it's you know,
when you have a player who's playing like Oxlade-Chamberlain, who looks like he's full of energy, he's full of confidence.
Yeah, peaking at a good time in terms of the season.
All that kind of stuff. And if Liverpool can go on and win the Champions League, a player like that in your squad is such a plus. And he has a little bit of tournament experience with England as well. It's a huge loss. There's no doubt about that. And he'd worked his way into a position to start for England. You know, but don't want to talk too much about England.
Well, and a lot of Liverpool fans I've spoken to have said that one of the things I like about Oxlade-Chamberlain is that, and this is, and, you know, whether you agree with this or not, to Liverpool fans, it is important that players get their club,
and
to them their identity is very strong, and they feel very passionately about that. And I think he's really taken to the club, and they've really taken to him. Which maybe on one level is largely irrelevant because the guy's got a bad injury at a key time, and it's bad for him and his career. But it does probably make it a little bit more painful for the fans because they really like watching him play.
Mm. It's also a tough thing for Liverpool as well because their only fit midfielders are now Milner, Henderson, and Wijnaldum. So presumably they're going to play every game. Mm-hmm. Any other knocks or suspensions are an issue there.
Well, and that brings us on to the Stoke game quite nicely because you know, we saw what happened with West Brom, and Liverpool went a couple of goals ahead and were pegged back, and they'd be absolutely forgiven for focusing on this second leg. I mean, they're going to finish in the top four, whatever happens now, and the fourth place, I think, qualifies automatically for the Champions League in England now this season, so I don't think it's a concern that if they finish fourth even. And Stoke need this badly, so it'll be curious to see how well they focus on this game and whether they... Obviously, I'm not suggesting they're not going to try hard or anything like that because players will be playing for a chance to play in the final if they get there and all that. Mm. But Stoke are fighting for their lives. So it's actually got all the makings of quite an interesting game.
Yeah, there's a strange stat about this one as well. Stoke have never actually beaten Liverpool when Stoke have been the away leg in the league ever in 54 attempts.
But
Paul Lambert has never lost an away match at Anfield. So which is the bigger institution? Yeah.
Someone, as they say in boxing gym, someone's old has got to go.
Well, Paul Lambert, mentioned him, he's won just one in 13 league matches since taking over.
It's been glossed over because of Pardew.
It has. Well, we often wonder and say, why on earth did West Brom not get rid of Pardew earlier? And why did, you know, we'll come on to Southampton in a moment, why didn't they get rid of Pellegrino earlier and so on? Well, Stoke did change it up, and they're still in the position. I suppose you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I think it does, to a certain extent, depend who you change it up with. Well,
I think that's an enormously important thing to say. Look, you're absolutely right.
But it was the game that Paul Lambert won at Stoke, was it his first game? I think it was early. His first game, even.
Yeah, it was early on.
If my memory serves me correctly. It was certainly early
on. Stoke have cancelled their end-of-season awards dinner, as they think it would be inappropriate to have any kind of celebration if they get relegated.
Yeah, which actually they could this weekend if results go against them.
Mm. Which is... And that is distinctly possible. Absolutely. They're away to Liverpool. They need to win this. Their one slight saving grace, as we've touched on, is that Liverpool will surely rest a few players. You would imagine Salah would be rested.
Well, as Jim was saying, it's difficult to see which midfield players they're going to rest.
True enough.
Maybe he'll just bring some young players in.
Yeah, well, quite possibly. They've got a few.
We've seen some good young players playing for Liverpool in the Cup under Klopp, haven't we?
Yeah, well, we could see the likes of Solanke featured. Yeah. Danny Ings, you'd imagine, would get a start. I mean, considering the injury stuff...
Those two famous midfield players, Danny Ings and Dominic Solanke.
Sorry, yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of young...
That was mean of me. I'm sorry about that.
Well, they play with the front three. Yeah. So you would imagine they would rest a few. But
could they play a 4-0-6 formation, perhaps?
Adam Bogdan in midfield?
Yeah.
A 4-0-6. I mean, who was it? De Rossi was saying that Liverpool did like a long ball.
Yeah.
So it's a chance to practice it.
And among all the other Roman midfielders screaming at the bench, saying, what is happening here? In Italian, over and over
Why
again.
Why on earth would you set up like that? I don't think we've given him enough grief for that.
For about 80 minutes, that Roman midfielder was just defunct.
Yeah.
Look, it would just...
Horncastle was fuming yesterday. He was fuming. Really? He came straight from Anfield. He was fuming.
You should have seen him in there.
Yeah, he was absolutely... I'll tell you what.
But I wanted to mention with
Ings... you off, Jim.
What? I haven't done anything.
Ings scored last week, of course, against West Brom. And coming on in a semi-final of a Champions League, considering the injuries that man has...
I have to say,
a recovery.
I was absolutely delighted for him because he's an exciting young forward. He got a dream move. To a huge club, and he's been so unlucky. Mm. And when you go to a club like Liverpool, obviously I've never done that, but I'm led to believe that the scrutiny's hard. As we always say on this show, the shirt is very heavy. It's difficult to make an impact. Imagine how much more difficult it is to make an impact when you can't get fit. So I'm really pleased for him.
And he had a setback as well and all that kind of stuff.
Which always seems to happen with a serious injury, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But anyway, Stoker, sorry Jim, a big 15-2 with Bet365 to get a result at Anfield. So £10 on that will return £85, including stake. Worth thinking about if you believe Liverpool will have an eye on Rome next week.
Yes, and one slight criticism. I found a little something that Mo Salah has done to slightly tick me off.
I'll not celebrate.
Apologising.
Yeah,
scoring those goals. So don't, if you don't want to celebrate, that's fine. That's your business. Don't apologise. You're meant to do it.
I'm torn on that though, because Salah does seem like a genuinely lovely, gentle man.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, but I think he's been too lovely and gentle there.
He's just got to be himself. Celebrate.
Well, you should have asked Graham Souness about that.
But the thing is though, Marcus, I do think the type of character Salah appears to be is relevant here, because if it's someone like Marco Arnautovic apologising, you're thinking you don't mean that.
Cristiano Ronaldo apologised once when he scored. He doesn't mean that.
All I'm saying is Salah might.
I think René Meulensteen, was it, who was doing a lot of one-on-one work with Cristiano Ronaldo, said to him after, "You look like a prat there. You should stop doing that."
Yeah, fair enough.
You know,
and then he made a
never,
prat of
it. And it's never an effect.
And he made a prat of himself at Fulham for about 6 months, didn't he?
Score a goal against your old club and you're labelled a prat. Let's move on to the South Coast Derby.
There we go.
Southampton versus Bournemouth. The big two are down there on the South Coast. A win for Southampton would be huge for them. And as you say, Jim, results go against Stoke, they could be relegated. Southampton would like that nothing more, of course. Now, with Swansea playing Chelsea, perhaps unlikely, you would imagine Chelsea would take the points there, although you never know. But if Southampton were to win and Swansea were to lose, and that is distinctly possible, then they would move 2 points behind Southampton with Southampton would move 2 points behind Swansea with a better goal difference.
No, they move 1 point behind them, actually. They're only 4 points behind them.
Oh, is that? Of course. Yes, sorry, you're right enough. Yeah.
Better goal difference is correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So...
it would be all to play for.
That's because
Southampton have because Stoke have played a game more than those two teams, right? So that's why Stoke are in a bit more trouble, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
I think you know, you never know. Southampton, I think Southampton and Bournemouth have traded sort of home. I mean, they drew this season at Bournemouth, I think. But last season, Southampton beat them at Bournemouth. But I don't think Bournemouth have won at Southampton. The game is at St Mary's, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah, so you think Southampton will be favourites there. But having said that, Southampton have been really poor this season. I was thinking to myself on the way into the studio today that I don't know whether the three teams that occupy the relegation places at the moment are pretty nailed on to go down, because it's a 4-point gap, as you say, at the moment. And these teams are down there because they don't pick up points.
Well, for me, the one that has the potential to get out of it is Southampton. But they need to flipping score goals. You know, the old cliche in football, goals are the hardest thing to score. Then they're the most important thing to do, of course. Southampton have players that can create. They actually, if you look at the stats, they don't lack creating chances.
I think they've got the largest chance creation outside the top six, maybe.
They are creating chances, but the front, you know, the strikers that they have zero confidence. Although Austin is showing signs, but I think he's scored a very few goals this season. Austin's injured, of course.
Yeah, well, that's it though, isn't it? If Austin can sort of, you know, find a run of form after, you know, we were saying about, you know, players coming back from injury then getting injured again, often it's going to take you a while to get your body up to what it requires. So, I mean, I think he's their potential sort of like ace card, really.
But it's got to be him. Austin, yeah. If they're going to stay up, it'll be Austin's goals.
All Southampton strikers between them have got 13 league goals this season.
Anyway,
and seven of those are Austin.
Yeah. Austin needs to score. They need to play to his strengths, and they need to score. But of course, if Bournemouth win, they'll go to 41 points. They won't better their points tally or position that they finished in last season, which was ninth on 46 points. But considering, you know, a bit of a bad start to the campaign and so on, I just think if you look at Bournemouth's season, no one's really been talking about them. They've just been going about their business, mid-table, kind of Premier League side. And that is such a huge
remarkable
achievement for a small club like them.
They sort of hide in plain sight, don't
yeah,
they?
That's right.
They've got pretty much all of those players are, you know, really, really capable and absolutely good enough for this level, but none of them are sort of stand out enough that the big clubs are going to come along and pick them off, as happened with Southampton, and this arguably led to them being in the position they're in now. They're like one of those fish that swims behind a massive shark. I mean, the shark's not going to eat them. And the other fish are going to go, I'm not going near that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a Richard Hammond.
Very much so.
Standing next to Clarkson, who is the main shit.
Yeah.
But Hammond probably doesn't get as much stick because he just stands to the left of him in one of those waistcoats.
Yeah, just stubbornly remaining on the porcelain.
In a waistcoat.
In a waistcoat.
Yeah.
Don't ever forget that bloody waistcoat.
Anyway, this game would normally be of absolutely no consequence to anyone who supports a South Coast team. But because Southampton are in real trouble, it is of interest, and I do for once applaud it being in the running order. Southampton are 13-20 with Bet365 to get a much needed win over Bournemouth on Saturday. £10 will return £16.50, including stakes should they do it. If they don't do it, it's all back to mine for a beer up. I think the writing is on the wall if they don't.
Well,
if you said to me, Marcus, if I could invert that old saying, if you said to me at the start of the season, Southampton will be in this position, I'd have snapped your hand off.
I'd have taken it.
I mean, you could even be in the position where you see Day and Lovren lift the Champions League trophy as they go down. Enjoyable in the Moore household, would
it not? Day and Lovren, who was sort of probably the most sympathetic Liverpool player to Roma on Tuesday night, wasn't he?
Lovren and Van Dijk, rather.
I can still misjudge those long balls.
Yeah.
If you want me to. I'm not. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for him to doing it, though. It keeps the tie interesting, doesn't it?
And one of the things Southampton can absolutely do is keep an eye on that £250 million or whatever they've received in transfers over the years while they're in the Championship.
This never stops, does it?
No. The worst thing is Pompey have absolutely ruined it anyway, so they're not going to play each other next season, sadly.
It's a great shame. Or in any subsequent
season. My superstition means that I feel that Southampton might actually win this game. If Hughes can get on plan with intensity, I don't see Bournemouth being able to really handle it because Bournemouth, not on the beach, but it's a good place to be on the beach.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
But Marcus, the other flip side to that, as you've correctly pointed out, is that Southampton just can't score. They cannot score.
Yeah.
And if you put Shane Long up front, obviously got two Premier League goals this season. I think he's made 26 appearances. Of course, he comes off the bench a lot. I know that. 26 Premier League appearances and two goals. Mm. I think if
they can get Austin among the, you know, getting on the end of some of these chances.
I think he's a good player. I was gutted when he went to Southampton.
Yeah.
he's one of my favourite forwards.
Well, I think that this is the weekend for Southampton. I think Stoke had their chance and they blew it against Burnley at home. And I think Stoke are all but down. This is the weekend with Swansea playing Chelsea, Southampton at home to Bournemouth, a side with not that much to play for, really, because they're not going to get relegated, Bournemouth. They're not even troubled by that. This is the chance for them and they really have to take it.
Yeah, and the fact that it's...
And I hope they do.
I think that's up to you. I think the fact that it's at St Mary's is a real plus for them, because I wonder, although I sort of dismiss this South Coast rivalry thing just for fun, it probably is quite a big deal for Bournemouth fans to be playing other big South Coast teams in the Premier League. So they'll be keen to create a bit of an atmosphere. But the fact that it isn't St Mary's means it might give them the edge.
Exactly.
Howe's quite good at keeping them motivated, though, isn't he? Even when you know you feel like they've got less riding on it than other teams.
A lot of tweets and a lot of tweets and calls on the radio yesterday talking about Eddie Howe and Arsenal. So he is highly rated.
Do you know what? I was looking at Bournemouth.
I'm not suggesting that would be a good idea. I'm just saying people were talking about it.
No, sure. I think that would probably be too much. But I would like to see Howe given a little bit more resource and given an opportunity perhaps at a bigger stage. I totally get why he wouldn't do that. Yep. And that's no disrespect to Bournemouth. They play in quite an expansive style. They score nearly every game. They don't concede that many. Mm. And the players that he improves, you know, the likes of, say, Lewis Cook and so on, I think Eddie Howe is the only English manager, for goodness knows how long, that actually, if he tried to go a step up, he could have a real chance. Yeah. However, you know, the only example we have is when he went to Burnley, and of course the club wasn't moulded almost in his image and so on. So
can I also say that they do concede quite a lot of goals? I feel.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Yeah. I think, and if you look at the stats, I think only a few teams have conceded.
All right, fair enough. Sorry,
but the other thing I just want to bring to the table very quickly is that. It's about fit, isn't it? Club to manager the club.
Yeah.
Just because a manager goes to a club and doesn't work out for him, it doesn't automatically make him a bad manager. Now, it might, because there's plenty of managers out there who've done poorly as managers, but sometimes it's just not the right fit. And we talked about that again on the continent a few months ago, where I think it was Andy was saying...
About Ronald Koeman?
No, he's about Zinedine Zidane.
Okay.
Is there anything to suggest that Zinedine Zidane would be a brilliant manager at somewhere else? Mm. Not necessarily. It's just a great fit for him because he's a legend there.
Yep.
He's got everything set up for him to succeed. I'm not trying to detract from what he's achieved there, but it fits for him. And I don't think Burnley fit for Eddie Howe very well at all at that point. And you don't know whether another club would either. Well, great. Stay at Bournemouth then. You're doing a great job. Enjoy it.
Well, and he could be at Bournemouth for goodness knows how long. They say that managers don't have, you know, obviously in light of Wenger going to be leaving at the end of the summer, you know, we won't see a manager in charge for years and years and years. But if Howe keeps this up, he could be at Bournemouth for the next 10 years, crying out loud.
Well, he's been there for 9 of the last 10 years.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got Bournemouth in mid-table. We're all saying that we think, you know, Arsenal's a step too far for him at the moment, and I would agree with that. Where do you think would be a good sort of bridge for that sort of gap? Somewhere like Everton, maybe?
I think Everton would be a good fit for him,
yeah.
But I'm sure Bournemouth fans won't thank us for that.
No, certainly not. And now it's time for correspondence with Jimmy Campbell.
Sure is.
Do you want a jingle for that, Jim?
Yeah, go on then.
All right.
Thank you.
It's peaks away, I can do what I want.
Yeah, it's good. Stay up as late as you want. Brilliant.
I still get a bit of 10, I'm tired.
Press the buttons in the correct order.
Yeah.
Steady on.
Read more than three emails.
People won't know they're born. People like the familiarity of this show. It's an absolute wreckage.
Go on, Jimmy, what you got?
Sam Blakely's been in touch.
Sam again?
Sam Blakely.
The goal, going for Grintle's ruiner?
Yeah, indeed.
We're not doing going for Grintle's today, so should I give you a little jingle now?
Yeah, go on then.
Just to remind Sam of the bad work he's ruined.
Barry Grintle's.
There we go.
So Sam says, evening, gents. I was very happy to hear my hapless name mentioned again on the show this week. Cheers for that. I worry that the Keegan stories have dried up, so you're using me as the scapegoat. Unfortunately, I don't have a good enough Keegan story with which to deflect, so I found a website proudly displaying his 48 most ridiculous quotes. I love that a website exists solely for this. Personal favourites include, one of his strengths is not heading. I'm not disappointed, just disappointed.
Yeah.
And we are 3 games without defeat is another way of looking at it. But if we're honest, we have taken 2 points from 9. Hopefully this will sate your need for a punching bag for a while. Cheers, Sam. Ramble, worst listener 2018, Blakely. Yeah, fair enough, Sam. I mean, it's a bit cliched, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you know, you're shooting fish in a barrel there, but fair enough, mate.
I'm not saying Sam is necessarily the worst listener we've got. He's just the most visible.
Yeah.
But, you know, he picks himself up and he comes back in the ring for another swing.
He does.
Yeah, indeed. So cheers for getting in touch, Sam. Got a very, very bizarre turn of events here, or turn of historical events. Dear Ramblers, I was listening to Monday's podcast when I heard Jim make the comment, what a bizarre subject for a musical, Stoke City. Well, actually, there is a musical based on Stoke City.
Oh my goodness.
The musical comes from a book called Zigger Zagger by Peter Turson. The musical is based on my great uncle John Bailey, who is known in Stoke as Zigger Zagger. John has attended all Stoke games home and away, with the exception of around 10 games due to health problems, for the last 60 years. He introduced me to Stoke when I was 8 years old, and I've been a diehard supporter forever since. Sorry to hear that, mate. I'm glad to say he still attends every game with his stopwatch to make sure the ref plays the correct amount of injury time. Unfortunately, it looks like Luke has been correct and we're going to sleepwalk into relegation this season. I'm just hoping that in the next 2 weeks, Mark Hughes gets fired from Southampton, takes the West Brom job and becomes the first manager in history to take all three Premier League teams down in a season. Charlie Craven, listening from Bucharest, Romania. So much going on in that email.
But yeah, it really is.
I did check out this musical, Zigga Zagga, and I'm not entirely sure if Stoke feature in it, but the guy who wrote it was from Stoke, and it was put on at the National Youth Theatre in Stoke, so I think the fictional team in it are certainly based on them. So yeah, Stoke City the musical sort of is real.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Why not? Why, I think more teams should have musicals about them.
I really, really, really want a Zigga Zigga.
I would say to Marcus sometimes gets that look in his eye where all he's thinking about is that line, and yeah, you could do anything in between the time where he gets to say it and he won't notice.
Absolutely, yeah. You'll recognise it from Sven-related
times. Yeah, he could say, say anything.
So, God, Jimmy, what you got?
One more.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, all. Simon from Canada here. Just thought I'd provide another tally update in Going for Gold. The current tally is as follows. Jim,
but I don't think we need to look into this
players.
Jim,
Marcus,
15.
10 players.
Ooh.
Luke, 7 players. Four. I initially held off on this email because there were 5 preview shows left until the Champions League final, May 26th, which meant there was a slim chance that Marcus could tie Jim's tally and be crowned co-champion. However, due to the late news that Pete will be absent this week,
I've been mugged
Jim
off.
Campbell can now be mathematically declared the runaway victor and will hereby be known as Jim Cambiola. Cheers, Simon from Canada. Fear it.
You've now
run from it.
Jim, you've now got to be known legally, change your name by deed poll to Jim Grintle.
Yeah.
That's
didn't
your
know,
prize.
Didn't know that, did you?
I think we all knew Jim was way ahead.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
Another title race just wrapped up too early.
Yeah. I thought he was more than 5 ahead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, same.
None of us have checked the count. None of us are going to be bothered. That's gospel.
I've not checked the count, but I'll be totally honest. I'm absolutely delighted I got 7, so I'm not looking into it any further.
I'm very surprised I'm in double figures, to be honest. But it is a bit of a shame, and I think we can all agree that because of Pete going away, then I am denied a proper title.
Yeah.
To paraphrase again, if someone had said to me at the beginning of the season, Jim could win, knowing that it means you wouldn't win, I'd have snapped your hand off.
Yeah.
So obviously, first place, I'd like to win.
Uh-huh.
But I sort of want you to lose as much.
Okay, if someone had said to me at this stage, Jim will have more than double the amount of Going for Gold points or whatever they're called than Luke, I would say I'd take
fair
that.
Enough. Yeah. And also, I am by far, actually no, Pete is, but Pete's not here today. I am by far the worst of the people in this room at FIFA 18 as well, which is embarrassing. Mm. Anyway.
I'm counting this as a trophy for Arsenal.
Right, right. It's time to go for a break, ladies and gentlemen, after which we will talk about Manchester United and Arsenal.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The only thing that they have got is the big boy up front, Sig Thorsson.
Oh, my word.
Oh.
It's my favourite one.
I don't remember it well.
If it was up to me, I would use that every single week.
Yeah. It's a shame he's not speaking in a sort of Icelandic accent. In it.
Oh,
yeah.
Stevie.
Like the way he says, it's sort of quite sort of Nordic, quite sort of Scandinavian.
Yeah, he was probably going to go into it, wasn't he? Right, ladies and gentlemen, the big game of the weekend for some is Manchester United versus Arsenal. Arsenal, of course, are at home to Atletico Madrid this week, but that's not happening but at the time of recording. But Manchester United, Arsenal away to Manchester United. The big news surrounding Arsenal this week off the field was that business with Arsene Wenger saying the timing of the decision wasn't down to him. And then there was sort of confusion, Jim, wasn't there, that whether he meant the timing of the announcement or the timing of him having his contract cut short.
Yeah, I think the comments around it suggest it's a bit of both, yeah, really, because he's saying he'll probably look at another job, which will be very, very strange. It'll be interesting to see if it's in England or elsewhere. But it looks like he means a club job as well. He's not just going to go quietly into the night.
My understanding, I mean, obviously, on Monday was the time for us to be positive and praise Wenger for his career and all the rest of it. But if we can be a bit more analytical, as much as the Ramble gets analytical, I suppose. To me, based on what I've heard, what I've read, people I've worked with over the last week, Wenger was sacked. He's effectively been sacked.
Yeah.
And we clearly, I understand why they wouldn't want to phrase it in that way or talk about it in that way, because he's been such a legend there.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it seems to me, reading between the lines, he's been so stubborn, they've not been able to successfully negotiate how they want to yeah, move him on. So they've just put it on him. And you can tell by some of the stuff he said that...
The stubbornness is still there. You can hear it.
And one of the most interesting things I heard from a journalist on Tuesday, was that someone asked him, the journalist who's very close to the club, it wasn't John Cross, he's very close to the club.
He loves that.
Yeah, said, will Wenger be involved in the planning of the succession of the next manager, the same way Ferguson was? And they said in response, no, he won't, because when asked who he thinks the best manager for Arsenal is, he would still say himself.
Yeah. I think as well.
So in which case, he must have been fired.
Well, I think that would always be the case with Wenger, though. He says he's obsessed with it, didn't he, really? He's sort of addicted to it. It was a wonderful quote from him. I will miss his way with words. It says, I'm a bit like a guy who plays Russian roulette every week and suddenly has no gun anymore. I will see how much I miss that gun.
Right. That's lovely. Yeah. You love his way with words. Do you love his way with team selections?
Not anymore.
Wenger, he praised Luis Enrique.
He did.
I mean, so that gave some sort of insight into what he was thinking.
I think it's worth noting, though, and this comes back to what Luke just said, that all of the rumours about who is in line to take over and who the favourite is to take over have come from things Arsene Wenger has said. He said that he'd like it to be a former player.
That's right.
Be that Mikel Arteta or Patrick Vieira.
Big soul,
but he's Sol Campbell. Okay. That'd be a really normal appointment. I'd love that.
Can I just say, I would love that.
Yeah.
There's nothing more. There's one thing I'd love more.
I would take it. But also, you know, Enrique is someone Wenger's talked up quite a bit, but it's nothing to do with him. You know, so it's very difficult.
Does it feel
to
like
know.
He's scratching around trying to have an influence still?
Well, it might just be that it's an easy sort of line for the press to take, because obviously he's going to talk about these things.
We've heard this week from Andy Brassel that there's no chance it's going to be Diego Simeone. That's not going to happen. And
unlikely to be Tuchel.
No, because I think he's. I think they did sound him out, but he's agreed that he's.
Well, his relationship with Mislintat as well.
It's impossible. Yeah, and also, to me, this might sound a bit old fashioned, but it's not going to be Luis Enrique because they won't pay.
Well,
they ain't going to pay the money.
I don't know. The managers probably earn quite well at Arsenal, but I think having spent a season outside of the Champions League and there being a very real possibility that there'll be another season outside the Champions League, their budget would have taken a whack. So, you know. Spent a lot of money on Aubameyang in January as well, which probably would have eaten into next season's transfer budget. How much money is the new guy coming in going to have to play with? Well, that may affect who gets the job takes the job.
I have to draw your attention, gentlemen.
Oh, I don't think Enrico would be a good appointment anyway, personally, but that's a
I have
point.
To draw your attention to this quote. I don't know if it's relevant, that Louis van Gaal said this week. I have now received an offer that I actually cannot refuse. I mean...
Fingers crossed.
I saw that too. 2 + 2 = 4 for me.
You know, again, this is
I saw him in a North London cafe yesterday. Looking for an old Arsenal programme he was.
Jim, I know what your opinion is. Luke, how good would it be if Van Gaal took the Arsenal job? Because he wants to get back at Man United.
If I could put it in real terms, how much of my own money would I spend on it happening? If I could guarantee it would happen, you know... It's a lot.
Yeah. You'd be bankrupt.
You'd remortgage your house. I might remortgage. I might put that extension on hold. Yeah.
You know what? This is the really strange thing from my point of view about this sort of situation. Because as I said on the show last week or on Monday, like I haven't seen this as an adult. So like if Louis van Gaal or Brendan Rodgers come in as the next Arsenal man, I just have to get behind them.
The thing is,
you know, I have to accept it and just deal with it and live with it and be positive about it.
I honestly don't think Brendan Rodgers would be a bad appointment. I understand what people may say, but despite the all key and all that nonsense, I think that he'd actually be an all right fit. The playing style, he knows the league
for a while. I think, you know, I have to look at where he left them.
But the question is, Jim, on that is how much, and I don't know what the answer is, but the question for me would be how much has he grown since then? What's he learned from that? I think there's a tendency to see big figures in football, particularly managers, is that's the type of person they are, and they're sort of frozen in time. Now, we all know he's done a great job at Celtic. That may or may not be worth anything, but we're used to see it. The last time we saw him regularly was at Liverpool, and he had his shortcomings. Is it fair to assess him in that in those terms a few years on? I don't know. I'm just saying he might have improved and learnt a lot from that.
Yeah. Also, I think you have to give credit to the people working in football who make those decisions. They know these things better than you know.
They've been preparing the ground for Arsene Wenger to be leaving for a while. All these appointments that have happened behind the scenes, all the things that have gone on, I'm sure they've got an idea in mind what they want to do. What we should say, though, to Arsenal fans is what we said to Man United fans when Ferguson left. Get used to being a normal club when it comes to this sort of stuff. The merry-go-round is about to stop at your stop.
I want it on record. I've been saying this for a long, long time. I mean, obviously, the wheels have come off this season, but I worried that Wenger was actually getting those squads to overperform to such a degree that it's going to be very, very difficult to
I think they're underperforming now.
Oh, certainly now. That's what I mean, saying the wheels have come off. But I think, you know, this is going to be it's not necessarily going to get better because
it's not going to be dull,
Jim. A lot of the problems are related to the board as well. And they're not going anywhere.
Well, the draw in this game, they're playing Man United, as Marcus has said, and the draw in this game is 16-5 with Bet365. £10 will return £42, including a stake, should the game end in a stalemate.
Jose Mourinho will want to win, of course. He will want to win to stay in second place. But Mourinho said that he'd like to be friends with Arsene Wenger, which is quite nice. Bit of support for the big Frenchman. He said, if he respects me even 50% of what I respect him, we can be friends in the future. Even 50%, Jim. Mm. Mourinho obviously called Wenger a specialist in failure.
Balance.
Yeah, Mourinho called Wenger a specialist in failure not that long ago. So he's obviously increased his percentage.
And a voyeur.
Yeah.
But I know Wenger may not leave the game, but once managers leave the game or leave a big job or something like that, it does tend to be a bit like when a prime minister finishes. It's almost like everyone sort of gets a bit more balanced to balance. So, do you know what? I always enjoyed working with him, or I always enjoyed playing against him. And we've seen relations between Ferguson and Mourinho over the years have completely changed.
Yeah.
I mean, Ferguson used to think of Mourinho as a bit of an upstart, didn't he? But I think that obviously they're probably quite close friends now. And Ferguson and Wenger as well, I think, is a similar situation. So I wouldn't be surprised.
But that was only when Ferguson didn't see Wenger as a rival anymore.
That's what I'm saying. So it changes the play.
They were still managing Man United and Arsenal. I know what you mean.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
You've got to keep up the charade, if you like. I mean, Lampard and Frank Lampard and Rio Ferdinand have spoke quite eloquently about this on BT Sport recently about their rivalry. Even when they met up with England, you know, they'd be like, "Well, hang on." Mm. And then they were friends, of course, at West Ham. And then after the playing careers and it all kind of died down, they were like, oh, yeah, we are mates, aren't we? We could be mates again almost.
For one, I'm hugely surprised they didn't put that to one side, didn't they? Yeah. Based on what I saw on the pitch.
Yeah. What I like about Mourinho, though, is when he talks about being friends with Wenger, he then says, but the reality is he was at Arsenal, he was the champion, and I came to the country in 2004 and wanted to steal his title. He's always got to mention his titles and how much he's won, Mourinho.
But he
has won a lot. Alexis Sanchez, is this a slight dig at Arsenal? He was asked about the difference between his current and old teams. And he said, I think Man United is a club with more history and we want to win trophies next year.
Well, it is.
There are thousands and thousands of sentences that have been written throughout football all week and you have to find one.
Every week.
If you take that on face value, I mean, that is factually accurate statement.
It's hard to argue.
More history?
Yes. Yeah, may not have got more history than
Arsenal. Okay, I'm only asking the question. Yeah. In the words of that reporter who was hit by Jim McLean, well, I'm only asking it.
Yeah. Ask Jim.
I think Jim answered it without being asked.
The big question needs to be answered here is whoever takes over at Arsenal, are we still going to be able to dig at Jim every week?
What, Jim McLean?
No, Jim Campbell, on the basis of it. I hope so.
I imagine you will find a way.
But Jim, the worst thing that can happen from my point of view is they hire a really good, really successful, instantly quite slick manager.
Ah, but Luke finds a way.
I will try and find a way.
Now, one thing I thought was interesting was Mourinho saying that it was sad that Wenger was leaving because it's, you know, the second big iconic Premier League manager. And it's right when he's... From its inception, obviously Ferguson was always there, and Wenger's been there for so much of it. It does feel like I hadn't really sort of looked at the wider picture of the sort of, I suppose, the footballing cultural landscape of the Premier League. It's going to be very, very different next season.
Why not get in Leonardo Jardim, the old ex-Monaco thing with Wenger and all that kind of stuff?
Why not?
He's certainly on the list, isn't he?
Glenn Hoddle, there we are. David De Gea, 17 clean sheets in the league this season, two more than Man City's Edison. I'm just trying to get a little bit of rivalry between the two Manchester clubs going again. De Gea's never won the Golden Glove Award in the league, which is given to
that's
the keeper with the most clean
me to
sheets.
Hear that.
Yeah, so he's on for it. So he needs to get over the line, so at least...
He has been the goalkeeper in quite a tumultuous period for Man United.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah.
Well, there we are.
There we go.
Crystal Palace versus Leicester City. You may think that this is... there's not too much riding on this, but Palace do need to get the points to...
Well, there is nothing riding on this, but you decide to include it.
Well, but
I think Palace have got a lot riding on it, do they not?
Have they?
They don't want to lose.
Certainly not.
There's 6 points clear of relegation with three games.
Well, if Southampton win, then they'll only be 3 points clear. Yeah. So, you know, you don't want to start going down that road.
I think you're both right.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. But both of these sites...
Who's more right?
Well, we'll find out on the weekend, won't we? I find this quite interesting, looking at these two sides and looking at their seasons overall. And so I suppose with that in mind, Crystal Palace, it's extremely unlikely they're going to be relegated, which is why I suppose I took that angle on it. But they've had managerial changes early on in the season, these two teams. Hodgson in September came into Palace and Puel in October for Leicester. And if Palace win, it would be a great result for them, of course, and surely they'll stay up. Hodgson's done a good job. You can't argue with that. I mean, when he took over, they were, you know, down in the doldrums.
Well, they were on the worst run in their history. It was the worst run in Premier League history, wasn't it? It was like however many games without even scoring a goal.
No points and no goals, yeah.
7 games, I think it was, yeah.
Uh-huh. And the 2-1 win against Chelsea was their first win, I think, of the season. That was in October. In October. Whereas now Hodgson's got them in a position where they're all but up now. Do you know what I mean? Palace fans won't want me to say that, of course. They don't want to jinx it or anything. And Puel at Leicester City, you know, he took over. They weren't great. Leicester finished 12th on 44 points last season. They're currently 9th on 44 with 4 matches left. And they can still finish 8th. And I was reading somewhere that it is a minority of Leicester fans, but there's a slight minority that are getting a little bit kind of like Southampton fans did with Claude Puel. And I think to myself that he's done by and large a decent job. He's not set the world on fire there, but yeah, it was very difficult to do that.
I mean, aside from the obvious outlier of them winning the Premier League, their highest finish in the Premier League is 8th, which was in 2000, and they finished 9th and 10th twice around that time. So, I mean, you know, if they finish 8th again, which they could, they're on course to match their second best ever finish. That has to be a success.
And I suppose you also have to ask the question, what do the fans want? I'm not trying to be sort of pejorative by asking that question. Genuinely, what do they want? Because presumably they want to stay in that part of the Football League, the Premier League. I mean, it's unrealistic, so they're going to win the Premier League again. And they have won it. I mean, so they should be grateful for that, obviously. But it's unlikely they're going to win it again. So they're probably looking to have a tilt at a cup and finishing, you know, the top half of the Premier League.
Challenge for Europa, maybe.
Yeah, and maybe play some all right football that they think they enjoy watching, which I think is important. Which people pay decent money to go watch. And I think they're playing all right football, yeah. You've got to be careful what you wish for. Claude Puel used to manage Southampton. Look at them now.
Yeah.
Tony Pulis used to manage Stoke. Look at them now. Mm. You know, it depends what you want.
Well, this is it. I think with Puel, I really would like to see him given time now. I know we've talked about some managers and you think, why have they kept them on that long? They should have got rid of them earlier. But it's not one size fits all. Every situation is different. And if you look at Puel, he had an interesting interview with Glenn Hoddle, actually. It was a bit of a loving, but, you know, sometimes that's quite nice to indulge in. And
imagine you indulging Glenn Hoddle lovings every day.
And with Puel, with that beautiful voice of his. Puel, I think...
Has he seduced Riyad Mahrez?
Is the jury back in yet? He's still there.
Yeah.
He managed to keep him just about... Well, that will be an interesting one if they can keep him in the summer, of course. But I think Puel, I think in his second season now, I know it's Monaco, it's a slightly different kettle of fish, but he won the league title with Monaco in his second season. He took Lyon to a semi-final of the Champions League. I think that was him. And established Lille as a Champions League side when he was given a bit of time. And I think next season... If they keep Mahrez, if they don't, then they'll need to replace him. But they've got a decent set of players there. I'm really interested in Leicester next season. I think that they could be looking at that sort of 6th, 7th place finish. And you might think, oh, well, brilliant. Well, actually, that isn't bad at all. Them winning the league title is just skewered everything, you know.
I think you're absolutely right. I think they'd be crazy to lose Puel. I don't know how many of the fans want him gone. I didn't even know that until you brought it to the table today. So
it is a minority. I hasten to add. But there is a little bit there, though.
Okay. Jim, you must agree with that. There's no way they should be losing Puel.
They shouldn't even be thinking about it.
Yeah.
Given that he was brought in because they were, you know, facing a potential relegation battle for the second season in a row.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I saw a lovely quote about the man who... it involved the man who won Leicester that league title, Claudio Ranieri. It's from Adrian Mutu.
Oh, yeah.
And
we definitely use it? I mean, have you checked this?
Don't worry. Well, the translation into English doesn't seem to warrant a court case. He said, Ranieri never allowed loud music in the locker room. That was when Mutu was playing under him. Whereas he said, Mourinho liked the music to be as loud as possible to get us fully charged. At Fiorentina, the manager didn't allow us to listen to loud music because Nakata wanted to read before games.
Nice.
Wow.
Takes all sorts.
Exactly, yeah.
Get him a little reading room.
I'd say.
Or some headphones.
Well, I don't know. I do not know. So there we are. I mentioned for Wilfried Zaha, who gave an interview recently, and he said that he believes that there's an agenda against him in terms of his play acting. He denies being a diver, and he was booked harshly. The other game was it for diving, but he says he isn't a diver. Now, this is an interesting stat. Since
this is the last three seasons.
The last three seasons.
The fouling thing, yeah.
Yeah, did you see that?
I saw it, yeah.
Yeah, Sky Sports produced a stat that said in the last three seasons, Zaha has been the most fouled player in the league. 282 times he's been fouled. The next player down is Eden Hazard on 247, 35 less than Zaha. Bit of a gulp there.
The other one's Dele Alli, isn't it?
Yeah, Dele Alli's third on 222, 60 less than Zaha.
I really like the...
He's being kicked a bit.
It's fascinating to me that the... idea in English football, I wouldn't be able to speak on authority in the other major leagues in Europe, but in English football, diving appears to be like a self-regulating thing. Mm. If you get a reputation as a diver, it happened to Ashley Young, you almost have to stop it.
That's right.
You have to stop it because you get so much stick that you have to stop to lose that reputation. And Ashley Young has sort of lost it now.
Yeah.
A few years ago, Ashley Young was getting hammered for diving.
Gareth Bale, too. There's almost, I suppose Zaha's having it now. There is a sort of poster boy for it, isn't there? Or I suppose a lightning rod's perhaps a better description.
You almost get conditioned out of it by the attention you get in the media. But also, the referees clearly think, it puts a seed of doubt in their minds. They think, referees are human beings, right? Mm. So they're going to read the press. Oh, this guy's been booked for diving four times in the last eight games or whatever.
Crowd get up as well.
Yeah, it's going to put a seed of doubt in their mind. So it actually can be a counterproductive thing.
Yes.
The only time I would advocate for it is when an English player does it in a big tournament. Mm-hmm. That should happen as often as possible.
Yeah, I agree.
But I feel a bit sorry for Zaha there, because look at those stats. He is way and above the most fouled player in the league. And actually, if he dives, because a lot of those fouls won't be picked up. He is being kicked about the pitch.
Mm, yeah.
One of the things, and that's cheating. That is cheating. Okay, if you're kicking a player and all
that.
Well,
no, it's cheating if you're doing it on purpose.
Well, a foul.
It's not cheating.
Yeah, a foul's not always deliberate.
Well, okay, fair enough. But if, come on.
Yeah, no, I know.
Look at the stats here. You're trying to say he's being targeted. So one of the things he may well have done is go down a little bit softly, because if you do that, then
that happens all the time.
Then players will think, I'll think twice.
If you stay on your feet, you're not going to get a decision. We all know that.
Exactly.
I think that's a fair point. But, you know, and part of the reason for this, Marcus, is that Wilfried Zaha is arguably the most important player to his team in the Premier League. I mean, you could say Mo Salah's probably up there. Well, he obviously is. But if you're doing a top three of players that are most important to their teams, Zaha would be in the top three.
Absolutely.
He's by far their most important player. We talked a while back about how they've lost every game he's not played in. I think it's 12 out of 14 now or something.
Yeah, they've lost
12. He's a very, very important player for them. So it makes perfect sense. He's actually 6-4 to score at any time this weekend against Leicester. So £10 with Bet365 will return £25, including stake, if he hits the back of the net.
There we are. All right then, gentlemen. What's our best bet with Bet365, Luke Moore?
Well, strap yourselves in, because it's big news.
Here we go. Here we go.
A bit of drama.
Controversy, isn't
it? There has been controversy, and I'm going to try and bring you guys up to speed. Ed Gibson, who was wrongly by me on Monday attributed as having a losing bet, is actually miraculously still in the seat, because, and I've checked this with Bet365, according to their rules, because Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang wasn't actually on the pitch when the first goal was scored last week, the best bet reverted to a straight Arsenal win, which came in at 1-2, so we raised £75 for Prostate Cancer UK. That's great news. That's the best news.
That's good news.
The upshot of this, of course, is that Ed is still in the seat and is now on for the first ever Ramble hat-trick.
People are, on a technicality.
And a chance to become an ORE, an Order of the Ramble Empire, and have his name on the wall of the studio for outstanding services to the Ramble.
People say in a tournament, if you're going to win it, you have to win one penalty shootout. And this is
his
equivalent.
Yeah, I guess it sort of is.
To me, this is a VAR decision.
No, well, it's been ratified.
Look, if the betting company are saying it,
I spent the week running over looking at the screen, and it was right. So Ed is back in the seat. I gave him the good news. He was delighted. He's come back with the following bet for his hat trick:
Liverpool to beat Stoke.
Seriously, hashtag pray for Ed.
Yeah,
get behind him. Huddersfield to beat Everton with under 3.5 goals in the game at 2-1. That bet's been made using Bet365's Bet Builder. £50 at 2-1 will raise £150 for Prostate Cancer UK. Should the bet come in?
Now Everton have been the scourge.
I know, that's the thing. He's gone hard here.
He has.
You have to be over the age of 18 to gamble. Do gamble responsibly. For more information, go to begambleaware.org.
When you're going for the hat trick, you've got to go big.
Yeah, I think so. Go hard or go home.
Yeah.
So good luck, Ed. That's this week's best bet with Bet365.
My goodness, my goodness. Before we finish, what has Luke been asking the listeners this week, Luke?
Well, this week I asked, because Paul Lambert said there'll be no end-of-season party for Stoke this season, should they be relegated, what event should the players of an underperforming and relegated team have to attend instead? Okay, and we've had a few good answers here. First up, Ed Mancy. Hello to you, Ed. They should have to attend a party of the team that finishes 17th and see what they could have won. Nathan says they should still have to attend an end of season party, but every drink is made to taste like the tears of their own fans.
Oh dear.
That's harsh. And I'll finish with this one from Tom Spinks. They should have to attend a Football Ramble live record. I think that's probably a punishment too far,
yeah,
Tom.
Yeah, if they paid, I'd be fine with it.
My goodness. Well, there you are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble preview show sponsored by Bet365. It's been a ruddy pleasure. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jimmy.
Goodbye.
Bye from me.
Hey, Marcus, have you heard this?
Barry Grintles. A few times.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.